Mafia Podcast.
Hello, everyone. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the main host and frontman for the Long Coat Mafia podcast. That worrying you here is us getting this show up to 80 miles an hour so we could break the fourth dimension and go back in time to this past weekend when we went to the library's Pop Culture and Comic Con. Well, they call it a pop culture show. Either way, more on how my thoughts on it when we meet as a hostful later this month. But we did get three interviews for you today, or I should say, Saturday. So, first up is Reefer Roberts. He's a comic book writer and artist. So, I'm going to let him tell you a little bit of what he does and everything else when in our interview. So, here he is.
Hello, everyone. I am unofficially at the library's pop culture show today. I'm here with
Reefer Roberts.
And can you, for the sake of those who don't know who you are, can you state what you do? And
sure. Well, I'm the creator, writer, and artist of the comic book Plastic Farm, also Nightmare the Rat, which is the ongoing tale of a demon rat who steals people's teeth, throws them up in the air, dances in the moonlight. I'm also the current writer on A&A, The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong for Valiant Comics, as well as the upcoming Harbinger Renegades, which will be coming out in November with artist extraordinaire Derek Robertson.
So, as an artist, can you tell my listeners what goes into doing a comic?
Sure. Well, when I'm doing my own, it's basically a lot of times it's just what I feel like drawing. I'll ignore all my friends for a few days. I'll sit down at my drawing table. I'll hammer something out. I draw all traditional, so it's pencils, inks, come out of it with ink all over my hands, and then it just comes a time of scanning it, putting it in a page layout program, sending it to the printer, and hopefully somebody will like it enough to give me money for it.
I was going to ask you if you prefer went with digital or hand-drawn. Which do you prefer is better, the hand-drawn aspect or the digital aspect?
Well, I prefer working traditional, hand-drawn. Just, I still have a day job, and my day job is sitting in front of a computer. So when I create my art, the last thing I want to do is to kind of mimic any aspect of my day job in a way. So sitting in front of a computer making art is not something I'm interested in at all. Plus, I've tried using some digital drawing tools, and it just—I think I'm too old, like an old dog in new tricks. It's just not working for me. But in terms of actual looking at comics, the way the softwares work now, and the way the drawing tablets are for computer, if in a good artist's hands, it's indistinguishable. So it's just a tool. It's just I prefer traditional.
Because you are, I don't want to say mostly an independent artist. Mm-hmm. What was your mindset for the creation of someone like Nightmare Mouse and the rest?
Well, with Nightmare, there was an old Laurel and Hardy movie, March of the Wooden Soldiers, or Babes in Toyland, depending on what bootleg VHS
or who
tape
owns
you had.
It for, right?
Yeah, where they take place in this old fairy tale, nursery rhyme land, and there was one character that looks like they just took a monkey and dressed him up in a rat suit.
I remember that. I know that movie. I love it. It looks like it was supposed to be like a copy of Mickey Mouse or something like that.
It looked like it was supposed to be like Happy Fun Time, but it was actually a very nightmarish hellscape that they put it on, like all kind of old movies tend to look to our modern eyes. I just started drawing the guy in my sketchbook, and then we started putting out our own newspaper-sized comic, and I needed something to draw on that, and I just pulled him out of the sketchbook and gave him something to do, which was steal people's teeth, and just really I enjoyed drawing him, and people seem to have
latched on.
They seem to enjoy his adventures as much as I enjoy drawing them, so I just keep going.
I know this might not be A good question to ask you, but I'll still ask it nonetheless.
Am I going to have to slap you after this question?
Oh, no. I doubt that, but it applies being an artist and okay. doing this type of circuit. over the past, I want to say 20, maybe 30 years, Comic-Cons and pop culture cons have become more and more public, in the public eye, so to speak.
Okay.
And with that, artists like yourself has been selling their page art, the extra page art they've had over the years.
Okay.
That being said, which is great for the comic collectors. It gives them something that's one of a kind and original. Do you foresee the newspaper comic artist doing that down the line? Because I don't see many comic strip artists doing that now.
I think that's a matter of... I know people who do collect comic strip art. Usually those sorts of collectors go back to like the old stuff. Old Charles Schultz, like Gasoline Alley, some older Will Eisner kind of stuff. But yeah, you don't see like too much Jim Davis art on the circuit. Though I don't go to many shows where the syndicated newspaper comic strip artists are at. But I do know that some people do buy that art. I'm sure that if you look at the right art dealers that it is for sale. I mean, everybody's got to eat. Jim Davis got to eat. Stephen Pastis does Pearls Before Swine. I'm sure he sells his originals at some point, or maybe he's holding on to them. But yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
The reason why I asked is because I recently saw the this documentary on Netflix about strip-based artists.
Okay.
And I don't know, I like to collect page art. You know, right now it's a little bit out of my price range, but you could buy page art from, depending on the artist and how bad they want to get rid of it, little as $10 to as much as $10,000. So there's something for everybody. But when I looked for like Jim Davis and some of the more relatively known artists online, granted my research came up null and void, but it's kind of hard to find. It seems like it's kind of scarce. That's why I posed that question.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm no expert on it. If it was me, I sell all my original art. Very few exceptions if a page is like very personal meaning to me, or Nightmare of the Rat strips I'm holding on to for right now. But yeah, it builds up. It takes up a lot of space, and I was like the... early on in my comic career, there was a comic creator who was selling his original art with a sign in front of it, I can't eat it, so I gotta sell it. So, I can't... Like, it's worth more, I think, to other people who are into collecting art and it becomes a special object for them than it is for me, where it's just in a drawer collecting dust. So, I can't imagine why a comic strip artist wouldn't sell their art. But some people are strange. I have friends who are comic creators who like holding on to all of their art, or at the very least don't like breaking up a complete issue. Like, they'll sell an entire issue all at once rather than sell an individual page. So
I can understand some artists want to keep a hold of their work, or at least some part of their work, due to it being part of their portfolio or reasons like that. How'd you get started? What made you get started in drawing comics and doing comics?
Well, early on, went on a lot of road trips. So my mom would always buy some comics to shut me up in the back seat while going on those trips, and it just sort of stuck with me, just reading comics. And then, like early on, like first grade, I saw some other people drawing and getting attention, and I thought, like, I want to get attention too. And so I just started drawing some comics, and nearly 40 years later, just haven't looked back, haven't given up on it. And it's just really become part of how I exist in the world. So if that makes any sense, just if I stopped drawing comics, I don't know what I would do. Just I got nothing, not much else to fill that creative void.
This might be a little bit harder question for you, so answer best you can. Over the past, I'd say 16 years, comics have become more and more recognized as an art form in upon itself.
Okay.
What do you have to, what's your opinion about those who say comic art is not an art form?
Oh, those people are idiots. I mean, there's nothing, it's all art. People who say it's like low art or pop art, it's still art. And, I mean, it's a commercial form of art, where instead of it's just being like, here's a nice painting, they're going to hang in a gallery and maybe somebody will buy it, but really it's just for gallery purposes. I mean, it's meant to be picked up and enjoyed and read over and over, and thus making it more of a commercial side of the art, but it is still art, and there's no reason it can't be just as valid an art form as a Dostoevsky novel or something hanging in the Louvre.
Could you say that also kind of contributed to the aspect of some artists selling page art?
Well, I think that was early on what caused a lot of art to just be destroyed, because the finished product, the comic itself, was seen as the work, and anything that went into creating it was just sort of seen as not important. Like early, like Kirby pages or Ditko pages, as just seen as, who cares about the originals? It's the final comic that matters. So a lot of the art was lost or just not returned. But I think nowadays the greater appreciation of comic books and the art as a legitimate art form has made the originals be a little bit more sought after and appreciated.
Okay, I almost lost my train of thought. What was I going to ask next? My listeners know that's commonplace. Like, and all of a sudden, what? Where do you see the comic industry going in the next couple of years or so? Do you see dividing, going more so from the mainstream of Marvel and DC to more independence, or with something still with the mainstream, or is there room for both?
I think with the big two, Marvel and DC, and their success in movies and television, there's going to be a much greater synergy between the two mediums, and you're going to start seeing the phrase, the tail wagging the dog. You're going to start seeing, I think, the superhero books in those two publishers mirroring the TV shows and the movies much more than the TV shows and the movies are mirroring the comics. I think we're already starting to see that with some character designs being redesigned to match the movie counterparts, or team lineups matching what's in the movies as well. So I think there'll be a much more streamlined aspect, but there's still going to always be your Image, your Oni, your Boom, where they're doing their own thing and not really where the comics come first. Or my work with Valiant. Valiant's going to have some movies coming out, but at no point whatsoever in the creative process is it ever brought up like, you can't do this. You can't do this with this character because there's a movie coming out and he's going to be in it and he's going to look like this. If I want to cut off somebody's hand or poke out somebody's eye and give him an eye patch for the rest of my run, nobody's telling me I can't do that because that doesn't match an action figure. So there's always going to be some parts of comics that are meant to be comics and pushing the medium forward and expanding the language of comics, not worrying about mass media appeal in other markets, that it's comics and whatever else comes. But so I think the divide between what I call like corporate comics and the more comics will probably get a little bit greater.
That kind of being said, if you don't want to answer this question, I could totally understand, but what are your thoughts about some of the, like, the social justice warriors saying, we want this in your particular comic or that particular comic, or else we'll, in essence, riot, so to speak?
I think comics should be for everybody, and that there are there should be a diversity in comics, that whatever your interests are, there should be comics to serve those interests. As a comic creator, I enjoy the freedom to create whatever comics I want. And if people like the comics I create, good. If they don't like the comics I make, then there's plenty of other comics, or there at least should be plenty of other comics that they could go in and enjoy.
Good answer. I don't mean insult. It sounded like a... it seemed like a stock answer, but it was very... I don't mean to insult you like that, but it was very thought out and very neutral. I'm going to let you man your booth, and I know you have a panel later today at upstairs.
Yeah, hope some people show up to it.
I'm going to leave you like that. Thank you for being on our show. Again, it was fun speaking to Mr. Roberts, and hope if you guys get a chance to see him at one of the many cons in the area, stop by and buy his stuff and read his comics.
Yep, I got a full list of shows that I'll be at on my website. It's just plasticfarm.com, and on all my social medias, it's just Plastic Farm. I've got a Patreon running. Just patreon.com/plasticfarm.
That's right, folks. Please check out his website, his social media, and so forth and so on. And as always, buy his stuff.
Yes, thank you very much.
Welcome back, folks. That was Rafer Roberts, or Rafer Roberts. Either way, if it was Rafer, I misheard and mispronounced it. Mispronounced his name at the start of the show, or start right before his interview. I hope you enjoyed what he spoke about and what his thoughts about certain things were. Either way, next up is Jasmine Jack, a wonderful artist and everything else. She's next up on our interview. She's the second of three. So here she is to say her thoughts and give her opinions on various things and to tell her tale. So here's Jasmine Jack.
Hello, everyone. I'm back in. This time I'm here with
Jasmine Jack.
And what are you doing here today at the Library Pop Culture Show?
I am displaying as a multimedia artist. I work with everything from glass to bone and graphite.
Some of the style here you have. Who's the major artist that's being sold in the book? Mostly you?
Yeah, no, that's all me. I go from regular portrait style to cartooning.
What made you get started in this type of artistry?
You know, it's kind of weird. Like, my parents were all pretty dorky. Like, mom was into things like Charmed and things. That's how my sister Piper got her name. And then they were Trekkies, so the sci-fi thing just came along. And then cartoons came in, and the wave of anime came from Japan, and it all just was downhill from there.
I know you... I'm just hoping that this is... coming in okay. Yes, it is. This is your sister?
Yes.
Her sister is laughing hysterical right now, despite the fact that this is an audio show. Your style seems more of a real lifestyle. Is that more... how long does it usually take you to do an average piece?
Well, it all varies. The ones that are less detailed, of course, take less time. But one of the bigger pieces, like I have a couple of portraits here of Captain America and Fish Mooney from Gotham, they each took around 4 hours total sitting time. And I had some big ones on display last year, and they took me several months, and that was just from lack of dedication to it. I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, no, not today. And
artist ADD?
Oh, God, yes. Most of this stuff, I finally got all the finishing touches on last night, and I've been working on this stuff probably 8 months. So, yeah. No, it's not that I can't do it. It's just that there's shiny things in the world, and I flit off and follow the butterfly instead.
Do you find that being a female artist, is it tougher for you in this type of thing to compete with something that might be more male-dominated?
Definitely. It is different. When you have female versus male artists, I notice that it's line work. That as far as male artists, their line works tend to be a lot heavier, which complements the comic book style. So it's more of a natural thing. At least that's what I find for my own, that I'm a little lighter handed. So when I go and to do things, I end up doing things in a anatomically correct and softer style, less lines, the better, than in my opinion. And then for comic books or cartoons and things like that, that it really is about the total form. It's the whole picture that you're looking at instead of exactly the anatomical correctness. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily matter.
Well, with comics, it seems anatomical correctness doesn't matter, period, but...
Exactly. Physics is, it's all second nature.
That's one of the things that I had problems with a artist many years ago. His style was, the best way to describe it was Powerpuff Girl type style in Dexter's Lab. And his main argument was that his style was better than someone like yourself or a Jim Lee or Amanda Connor. And his main argument was that all art has to be based in the laws of physics.
You know, I can't agree, because I'm like a major fan of things like One Piece, where your main character is made of rubber and can stretch his bones. So physics is not quite the thing for me, but I do agree that your form has to make sense. If something is moving in such a way, I want to see how it moves. If it's supposed to be a cat, I want it to move like a cat. But I don't think that it's a difference in style, because things can be as simple or as complicated as you want to make them, wherever you're comfortable in your own artist spectrum, and still convey the same message. Like, I can have these ultra-complicated things of Captain America, and someone can come along and do just a line work with just black and white page and have the same level, the same quality of work, but it's a different style. I think it's all about where the artist, the individual, is comfortable in what they love doing.
Because I want to ask the same question, or similar question I asked Robert, the main artist on the other side of the room, so to speak. What's your viewpoints in reference to a lot of the louder voices in the social justice community that wants main characters changed in some way in the geek community?
That's pretty complicated, because you have so many different generations. My uncle is the one who introduced me to many different comic books and things like that. And so his generation, the originals coming off of, you know, out of the 60s or wherever, would differ greatly from the ones that I was introduced to. But for both of us, we go to our nostalgia of when we were first introduced, and they're totally different generations. So it's all a matter of opinion, really. It's like you set up the Jokers, even, is a great example. You look at the TV, or Jack Nicholson, or Heath Ledger, and then now we have Jared Leto. They're all the same character, but completely not. They're generational mirrors. You have that slapstick comedy of the TV show with Adam West, and that's reflected in Jack Nicholson. And then you have this dark strain that you have, like, in the Gotham TV show with Heath Ledger, and I haven't seen Suicide Squad just yet, but I assume it's following the same vein, that darker style. And I'm not sure.
I know it's a tough shot.
Yeah.
Some artists, the artist that was here gave a relatively neutral response, and it was his opinion. It's like, there are some artists, female artists in the artist alley here to ask, and that's one, to be fair. Other people in the comic artist community said, you know what, basically what they're saying is, for the social justice warriors to not necessarily shut the F up, is quiet down. If you want changes, learn to draw, learn to write comics, and come in and do your own thing.
Absolutely. I definitely can agree with that. I mean, I think it's probably a warped quote by this point, but it was Gandhi of "Be the change you want to see." Is if you have a storyline or a character in your brain that you want to see, or a version of a character that you know, get involved. Go to the school, get in contact with the people that write these things, and get yourself off the ground. I mean, all of these great names that we hear started somewhere. So as far as changes or viewpoints, it's all about the person and their own experiences, but they've got to be the ones to enact that.
Well, damn it, I hate... Sometimes I have interviewer ADD. It's like, I know where to go with this, but and all of a sudden, shiny.
Right.
Squirrel. But, it sometimes for me it's, you know, it's my job to do the tough questions, and other times it's like, okay, I got to, damn it, squirrel.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And it, you obviously, again, you're artist geek. Have you done other stuff that's more real life as to scenery or?
Yeah, I've done some still life, but it was pretty early on. My mother handed me a picture of myself and was like, "Here, you've drawn trees 1,000,004 times. Try drawing people." And I'm like, "I don't want to. I'm never going to do this again." And now that's pretty much all I do. Is that because I found it so difficult that I did the transition from being scenery or landscape oriented to being portrait oriented. But I mean, there's even some stuff in the book here that I've gone back to the roots, so to speak, and done nature and scenery and things like that.
To kind of wrap this up a little bit, what's your advice to people who wish to become an artist like yourself?
Do it! You know? I started when I was about 3 years old with a fistful of Crayolas on one of those little plastic tables, just scribbling to hell and back. And through that practice, I learned. I found out what I loved, and I expanded on it. I did what was difficult, and now I'm here. And as far as people finding themselves, you're not going to know until you just go ahead and put your nose to the grindstone, so to speak.
All right. Thank you. And where can we find, do you have a website or anything that we can find?
Currently, I'm on Facebook as Fidgety Gingers Art. And you can search me through that or through my whole name of Jasmine Jack, Jassmine.
And you heard that, folks. If you search for her on Facebook and all that, and she is selling anything, feel free to purchase her stuff. She has probably PayPal and other accounts that you can give her. Or if you just want to give her money, she'd be more than happy to take your money.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to do anything? Yeah.
For that, we'd like to thank Jasmine for being on the show, and her episode will be tied up with the other interview we did today on Monday. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Christopher.
Welcome back, folks. That was Jasmine Jack, and while we were at the show, we ran into Matt Burns. For those of you who don't remember, we had Matt Burns back in late September last year when he was promoting the 4-State SlasherCon, and we mentioned him a couple of times earlier this year in reference to his 4-State Retro and Pop Culture Con. We ran into him at this show promoting his winter show that's coming up in December. Excuse me. He talked for us. He's our final interview. He talked about his winter show coming up, a little bit about promotion, what goes into such a show. He promised us, we'll see how it goes, but either way, he said he would like to be on longer. So, either way, here is Matt Burns telling about the winter show and a little bit about promotion. Again, everybody, Matt Burns.
Hello, everyone. We're still at the pop culture show at the Martinsburg Public Library. You won't believe who we ran into today. We ran into Matt Burns, who is promoting his
Winter Pop and Comic Wonderland.
When's that happening?
December 3rd and 4th in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, at the Cosmic Skate and Play. We had a great turnout for the first one, so we're trying to do another one here.
I heard through Facebook there was close to 1,000 people that showed up at the 4 State Retro.
Actually, there was over 1,200.
1,200. Yeah. That's a very good turnout. We were there doing interviews. We had our Good versus Evil panel. With all of which found at our site. Oh, who's going to be at the Winterfest this year?
Well, we got some folks from Star Wars. We got John Morton, who played Dak Ralter in Boba Fett and Empire Strikes Back. Got Barriss Offee from the original trilogy. Let's see here. We got two of the Rangers from Dino Thunder, Jeff Parazzo and Kevin Dehaney, who were the White and Blue Rangers. We got Jim Tavar from the Harry Potter series. He was Tom the Innkeeper and Prisoner of Azkaban. Michelle Knotts from Pokemon. She was Jesse from Team Rocket, and we got some other cool people too. So,
are there going to be surprises being announced over the next couple of months before the show?
Yeah, we still have four more guests to announce. Like I said, we got comic book artists that worked for Marvel. We have a former professional wrestler, WWE legend. We have a guy who has been on a lot of retro TV shows like Star Wars, Adam's Family, some cool stuff like that. And let's see, who is the other one? The other one was on a popular 80s cartoon.
If we had more time, I'd be twisting your arm right now for exclusive, but we'll let the surprises happen over the next couple of months. Where can we find more information about the show?
You can find it on 4statecon.com. That's FourStateCon.com. And we're on Facebook and Instagram under 4State Retro Pop Con.
For those who don't know, and I know in our previous episode, we talked about promotion. What goes into promoting a convention of your size?
Oh, a lot. A lot of getting out the wallet. A lot of getting out the wallet. Like I said, we just got an ad in Baltimore Comic Con program. We got an ad in Intervention Con, and just, you know, hitting up every con and trying to talk to people and network. I think we got a good thing going here, so I really hope that people can get behind it and have a great time.
What are the bare bones basics of promotion?
Well, I mean, you know, a couple $30 Facebook paid ads don't hurt. I mean, the last one we did, I think we paid $40, reached 17,000 people. So we can do stuff like that. You got to print out flyers. You got to get them everywhere. You got to get them in your comic shops, your game shops, your malls, your pizza shops, your truck stops, wherever, any place that will let you put that flyer in their window, you put it in there. I mean, like I said, and you got to keep on the Facebook, the groups. You know, I'm in a lot of Comic-Con groups, a lot of Star Wars groups, a lot of Walking Dead groups, a lot of things like that. And you got to keep hammering it, because you never know who's going to see it.
So it's not easy work being a promoter, especially a local promoter.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, when you're trying to establish yourself, but it's hard because you got a lot of bigger cons like Baltimore Comic-Con, you know, Otakon, you know, a lot of these bigger ones or whatever. You know, it's hard for an up-and-comer to compete. But the good part is we've never really had a bigger con in this area, so. I think a lot of people were very impressed with the last one and hope they continue to be impressed with the growth and progress that we hope to make.
That's why I think a lot of success was with 4State is that it's not an hour and a half away. It's not 2 hours away. It's nice and local for a lot of people. And I think the admission for 4State was roughly, what, $10?
It's $10 at the door. I mean, right now you can get a two-day pass for $10. So we try to keep our prices low. We try to keep everything affordable for everybody. I mean, the vendor tables are $75 for 2 days. We're trying to keep everything affordable so everybody can make money and have a great time.
I know we're going to be there. We got a two-table, 7-foot spot, but we'll be there promoting and hawking our stuff in a way. Hopefully we'll get a lot of interviews, and it's one of our ways that a show like ours can promote. It's coming to a place like yours and making connections with people like you. Symbiotic relationship with guys like us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got to have people that that support you and follow you, that have followings, that can, you know, that can, you know, actually that you guys can help each other out. I mean, it's I mean, you know, you can't. I mean, just like this interview here, you know, hopefully somebody will hear this that doesn't know what we are, and you know what, they'll come out to the show and hopefully have a great time. So yeah, it goes hand in hand.
I know we had a great time. I know I'm making it sound a little bit narcissistic, but in a way, it does shows like ours offer an added benefit to shows like yours, meaning offering interviews that someone might have missed or a panel that someone missed at your show that in a way also promotes your show for the next time around.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to have people that are running panels that are knowledgeable about the topics. You can't have just anybody run these panels. And you guys, you did a great job with the Power Rangers panel. And Maverick, so you're probably doing that again this time around with Dino Thunder. So hopefully you're doing your homework.
I'll be doing my homework for that. I think the beauty about the last panel is that they've been doing it, panels like that, for a heck of a lot longer, and it just made things a smooth sailing for it. That's my impression I got. And not to mention, people like Vernon Wells treated me like, in essence, like family. Like, I've been doing it for years. So, what's it like getting some of the, I don't want to say major celebrities, but the invited guests to a show?
Oh, I've had good experiences with just about all of them, actually. I mean, Vernon Wells was great. Robert Axelrod was great. Michael Copan was great. They were all great people. Everybody from The Walking Dead from the last show was great. The Disney animator Philo Barnhart was an amazing guy. Sharon Lentz from Dark Shadows, of course, you got an interview with her. She was amazing. Like, I mean, you know, we had a great cast and crew for last time. So we're hoping for, you know, we're hoping for the same this time around. You know, we have a lot of cool stuff happening.
I know you've done mostly music venues in the past. What lessons have you learned from doing that has made doing what you're doing now with the comic shows and pop culture shows have transferred over?
Well, you got to kind of take whatever knowledge you knew about the music shows and kind of throw it away. Yeah, just because the place is a good music venue, it doesn't mean it's a good convention venue. I mean, we saw that with the 4-State Slasher Convention. With the new venue we have, I know a lot of people think it's unorthodox because it's a skating rink, but at the same time, it's great. It's all flat. It's all one floor. It's all wide open. So I mean, you really have no problems with it. I mean, there's no oddities. There's no, everybody's not just, you know, everybody's not like trying to get their stuff up steps. And I mean, it's just the vendors all thought it was a dream. So
So there is some sort of learning curve between being a music promoter going over to a pop culture type promoter.
Absolutely. I mean, it took me two to three times to figure that out. But luckily, better late than never, huh?
But is there some similarities with actual, not, I'm not saying setup, but with promotion and everything else? Some similarities?
Oh yeah. I mean, you gotta bust ass no matter what you do. I mean, no matter what kind of show you're doing. I mean, you gotta work hard. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. They think they put it up once on Facebook and magically they're gonna get 1,000 people. It doesn't work that way.
In essence, what kind of some people around here think, oh, we'll put up a flyer and a small little ad in the paper and people will just automatically come. So, as we both know, that's kind of irrelevant.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, you gotta work harder than that. You gotta paint the town. You gotta paint the town. You gotta be on Facebook. I just recently, I mean, my old dinosaur bud just signed up for an Instagram account, and it took me a while to figure out how to use it, but now I'm using it, and I think it's actually working well for me as well. So, and eventually I'm gonna get around to Twitter once I can figure out how to get my thoughts so small.
I know how that feels. And one of the things I told my co-host is that one of the things that he kind of installed into my head is that where do I need to go to get the people that are not seeing my stuff, meaning if my listeners are primarily going to Martin's and Target per se, I can't have a flyer up in Food Lion across town. Is that similar thing that you as a promoter go through?
Well, I mean, you got to be where the people are. Like today, you know, you got to be where the people are that are into this sort of thing. I mean, you can't just stick up a flyer somewhere and hope for the best. You got to be where the people are. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, mean, you got to hit, you know, these small, even these small library conventions, you can make great connections at. I mean, you know, you can make great connections, you know, at any show like this. I mean, whether you're just going to the local comic store and you see a bunch of guys in there, go up and say hello. What's the worst that can happen? They're going to tell you to F off. I mean,
that's why I give someone like yourself credit, give us credit, because we managed to cut our teeth at the 4-State SlasherCon last year, giving us a chance with the interviews and the panel and so forth and so on. I've always said that. So,
well, we always looking for help. I mean, you know, because I mean, you run something as big as 4-State. I mean, even though it's a smaller convention in a lot of people's eyes, it still takes a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot of work to, you know, make sure everything runs smoothly. I mean, like last year, you know, we made some mistakes last year. We made some mistakes on, you know, like a lot of the panels didn't run so smoothly. Luckily, yours did. Well, I mean, but, you know, some of them, you know, we wound up skipping a couple. I remember it was things got out of hand or whatever. It was just like I said, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, so, you know, that's something we got to work on. You know, and, you know, we got to work on, you know, I mean, even if it's just something as small as, hey, the lights weren't very good in that back corner, so we got to make sure there's lighting back there. And, I mean, it's just, you know, you got to learn from your mistakes. Some people don't know how to learn from their mistakes, and that's where they keep making the same mistakes over and over again.
I mean, yeah. But, for right now, we got good along. When is the winter show, and where is it?
It's going to be December 3rd and 4th at Cosmic Skate and Play in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, Buchanan Trail. I don't know the exact address. It's out by the Sheets and the Walmart. I mean, and Waynesboro only has really one road in it, so you'll find it. Trust me.
And if anything, there is an event page on Facebook. We'll link to it in our show notes, and we'll link to at least the winter show page that you have, and we hope to see you at the show.
Thank you, Chris.
And as always,
again, that was Matt Burns, the promoter of the 4-State Retro Pop Culture and Comic Con. He's putting on, as you heard, the Winter Pop Culture and Retro Show in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, this December. Hope you all could attend to see all the wonderful guests he has planned for the show, and to see us at that particular event. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks in reference to what was said on our show, you can always email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. If you want to go back and listen to all our episodes that we recorded, because you are a new listener, please go to our website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. If you've been listening through the website and wish to be notified about upcoming episodes, I do usually tell everybody on our social media, which is usually our Facebook people are usually the first ones to be notified. You could always go to Facebook and do a search for the Long Coat Mafia podcast. But if you want to be the first one to be notified and get the episode before I tell everybody else, just subscribe to the show on iTunes and Google Play Music just by searching for the Long Coat Mafia podcast. And while you're there, like and review us. That way, if they ever, it doesn't really affect our ratings, but if they ever do a list of the most liked episodes and podcasts and so forth and so on, we get put on that list. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle there is Long Coat Mafia. If you want to follow us on Instagram, our Instagram handle is the same thing, which is Long Coat Mafia. Again, our Facebook is Long Coat Mafia Podcast. Either way, like us, review us, let us know how you're doing and what you enjoyed about our shows. We are very fan-friendly, and if we get enough emails in, we will dedicate a whole show to those emails. Believe it or not, we will. If you don't believe us, we dare you to send in the emails. Our next upcoming episode should be in like 2 weeks or so. Not sure what we'll be covering, but either way, that's all for now. And until next time, we are out of here.
It's shocking, humiliating, and it's unacceptable. God!
Oh, come on!
It's a classic!
The only show in the world that gets better the more it's rerun!
Do I get a choice?
No! No!
Screw you guys! I'm going home.
Okay, people, move along! There's nothing to see here!